A quick note, at Focus Corp, we don't just do retained executive search, but we also place interim finance and accounting professionals. If your team's down a headcount, or covering a long leave, or you're tackling a special project, or you're just slammed, we can get experienced bilingual talent to you fast. Reach out. My contact details are in the show notes. Now, on to our show. Hi, it's Dave Sweet, founder and CEO of Focus Corp. Thanks for listening to the Focus Corp podcast. Before we get started, I wanted to let you know that the Focus Corp 2025 salary guide has been released. We're there with some great insights, not only for information about salaries in Japan, but insights about job market, hiring, and what's important to both companies and individuals looking for a job specifically in Japan. There's a link for that in the show notes. Please take a look. And now on to our program.
When you move to these different cultures, when you are dealing with different people, you cannot expect that you step into Japan and you have a long-standing culture and then everyone will have to adapt to yourself. I think you have to adapt to the needs of the market and the people. And it's not the same tools that you have to use today versus what you used yesterday in different locations with different people, with different teams. So I think that adaptability, it's important.
Welcome to the Focus Corp podcast, where we dive deep into the stories and insights of leaders who are shaping the future of business in Japan. Today, I am thrilled to introduce Ricardo Tasca, who is a seasoned marketing and management professional with over 23 years in FMCG across markets in Brazil, Mexico, USA, and Japan. Currently, Ricardo serves as the general manager and representative director of Hill's Pet Nutrition in Japan, where he's led growth and profitability through strategic insights, through cross-functional leadership. His expertise spans product development, advertising, and global strategy management, which we'll be talking about today. His approach emphasizes both analytics and talent development, driving brand impact and performance across diverse markets. We'll dive into his expertise, explore his insights in marketing, brand leadership, and discuss the nuances of leading in Japan's competitive landscape. Welcome, Ricardo.
Good morning, David. Thanks for having me here. It's a pleasure to speak to you today.
It is wonderful to have you on our episode. So kind of lead our listeners. Tell us your road to your current position here in Japan.
You mentioned, right, I am currently the general manager for the Hill's Colgate business in Japan, which is also known as the Hill's Pet Nutrition globally. And Hill's is part of the Colgate Palmolive organization. So that's where I started my career back in 2001 in Brazil, where I am originally from. I worked through different categories, products in consumer and also in retail marketing in Brazil. In 2010, I had my first international experience. That's when I relocated to Mexico City. And I got a chance to work with innovation for oral care products for the Latin American region. From Mexico, I moved to New York, where we have the headquarters for the Colgate Palmolive business. And I got a chance to work with the global team in developing strategies, communication, all the plans for toothbrushes, globally. And from New York, I got my first opportunity in Hills. That was back in 2016. That's when I relocated to Kansas in the U.S., where the headquarters for Hills is based. And I got a chance to work again with the global team in Kansas, leading the Science Diet brand, which was an amazing experience for me. And I think that's when I got the passion for the pet food industry. Which then brought me here to Japan in 2018. I came here to Japan to be the marketing director for the Hill's business while we were going through some transformation. Uh, and After that, I was appointed as the general manager back in 2022. So it's been an interesting 20-something years journey with the company.
That's great. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. It's interesting. I'm always, because we always think about coming from America, I always think about Colgate, right? And it's, to me, it's always toothpaste. And just, I hope we can get, Colgate toothpaste, more in Japan. Can you manage that for us, Ricardo?
I would love to as well. That was my first shock when I came to Japan. I couldn't find like my Colgate toothpaste on shelf here. I'd love to get that.
That's our omiyage. When we go back to the US, we always bring back, a few tubes of that. And whenever I go into Hills, I love your office. It's great. You have all the pet food. And I'm always amazed because one of the challenges in marketing for your product is that your consumer doesn't really talk much. Your cats and pets, and they're not the ones doing the buying. So it's always a challenging marketing situation for you.
It is a challenge, but we have, on the other hand, some very vocal pet parents that express the needs and feelings of their pets like constantly, right? I think it is a highly emotional category, and it's easier to engage with the pet parents.
Yeah, well, I'm looking forward to diving into that in a little bit. But I mean, coming into Japan, what was kind of your biggest challenge that you faced when stepping into the general manager role here in Japan?
Yeah, you know, as I was just sharing with you, like my background was in marketing. So I grew up in that functional, specialty, like part of the organization. And that's where my strength was. So moving to general manager, it wasn't, or it's not an easy change, right? I had to experience like new situations. I had to deal with challenges that I was not used to in the past, and I think that required a lot of rely on people, on team, on your processes, so that it could make that transition a bit more comfortable to myself.
You said you found challenges you weren't accustomed to in the past. What do you mean by that? What can you share any of those?
Yeah, sure. You know, like discussing in the past in marketing, innovation, communication, brand strategy, I was very used to that. I think when you have to discuss on other areas of not expertise, on supply chain, on finance, on the entire company, organization, and people, I think those takes the conversations to different level. Mm-hmm. And I think you have to get used that is not your area of historical expertise, and then you need to rely much more on your teams to discuss and to make the best decisions possible.
That's great. A lot of our listeners are global HQ or APAC, and they're trying to understand Japan. And I think a lot of people hear, oh, Japan's so different, right? Since you've come into Japan, what do you think are some key differences that you've noticed, especially in FMCG markets compared to like Brazil and Mexico and the US? I mean, you've been some very diverse markets. How do you see Japan as different?
I'd say Japan is different. So are all the other markets, right? So all the markets, they will have some special nuances in their consumers, in the market, how it is. If I give you some examples, like when I was back in Brazil, when I was in Mexico, or even like Latin America overall, being a developing region, you have more of the impact of economic fluctuations. There is a lots of ups and downs in the economy in these markets that do impact how consumers purchase the products, how they behave on their day-to-day. I think these consumers, they tend to rely more on strong brands. They want to make the best out of their spending. So the strong brand becomes very important for them to know they're making the best decision for them and for their families, right? You also see some differences in the how the retail landscape is organized in these countries. As more, again, as a developing region, you do see more of the traditional trades, traditional channels playing an important role. This will mean like the small neighborhood stores that you don't get to see everywhere. They are still very prevalent in these regions. You go in the US, US is also different. You have also, it's very competitive. You do have very strong brands. You have a more consolidated retail structure. It's bigger store, bigger chains, right? Bigger stores. And again, the role of brand becomes important, and the role of innovation also becomes important there, as you want to stand out on this competitive environment. I think also other trends in this developed market plays a role, such as sustainability. You do see new emerging trends like e-commerce playing an important role as well in how the market is developing. And then you look into Japan, which is a very a highly advanced market. One thing that caught my attention immediately as I got to Japan is the high expectation that consumers have. It's also the expectation on and the need for high quality products. And the reliability that they have and they require in these products. You see also that the population profile in Japan, it's different than what you see in the rest of the world. And the needs, because of that, they become also different, and they impact how the market is and how the consumers behave in Japan. So I'll say to your question, Japan is different and the other markets are as well. I think we have to identify those differences and work the best with them.
Yeah. That's what I think. Japan loves to overemphasize its diversity, that it's different. It's like Japan's different than everywhere else in the world. Well, I find from speaking to so many leaders that 80 to 85% of all of the business is the same globally. What you're doing in US, Brazil, Japan, it's all very similar, but there's the 15 to 20% nuance that you need to be aware of. And that I think that's important, especially in your industry, Japan, the consumer is older here. I think that's so important. And then just how wholesale plays such a big role in the FMCG world compared to, like you're saying, in Latin America, where it's still a lot of the mother and mom and pop shops, or the consolidated big chains in the US, a lot of these companies come to Japan, and it's the wholesale world just surprises a lot of people. It's a shocker, right?
It does. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
How do you see the pet care industry in Japan specifically?
It's an interesting category. I think you see we were just talking now about the differences on the people and profile. You mentioned aging. I think that does impact the category. So there's other like trends that we see that do impact the category. Like you see more families with no children. You see more single people in Japan. You see also that people live more in bigger cities and therefore have small spaces. So all of these do impact overall the trends on the pet category. And the pets, they are looking for pets to provide emotional support. They take care of the pets in Japan as if they were a member of the family. So it did shock me, like the first time I came here to Japan, and you look at all these strollers in the street, and those strollers are carrying pets and not babies. So it is a different way of taking care, like to a whole new level of humanization.
Amazing, right?
And I'm saying like because of the smaller spaces, you do tend to have also smaller pets than what we used in other parts of the world. So as a consequence, you do have like more cats than dogs. They're easy to care inside the house. You have smaller dogs than what you have in other parks, and they live inside the house. And then all of these differences, they help shape how the pet category is in Japan. So it is a, it is an exciting category to work with. It has a lot of external impact, but it's a cool place to be.
Now, Japan is a pet care, it seems a fairly competitive, saturated market. Am I right in saying that?
I'd say it's a highly competitive market for sure.
And how do you see that evolving over the next few years?
I think we expect that this will continue to be like then. I think you see like how people are taking care of their pets, how the industry is adapting to that. I think it will continue to be a highly competitive environment. But there's also a lot of opportunities still for the category to evolve and to grow.
Hills has such a strong brand image. It's very well known. It's very well respected, especially among pet owners and vets. It's kind of a wonderful brand identity. How do you balance the needs globally with the brand versus the locality of the brand and against competition as well?
Yeah, you know, as you said, like Hills has very strong brand and presence and position globally. And as well as in Japan, right? So what we try to do is look at what makes us strong and different and unique. And I would say in our case, our science, it's our nutritional expertise. That's where we invest a lot of time and resources on developing high quality, cutting edge nutrition. So I think those, I would say this is the core for the brand, and those will be like non-negotiables that we want to bring whatever we are. And then what we have to do is make sure that that core becomes relevant in the markets that we operate. It becomes relevant here in Japan. So how we localize our messages, how we localize our plans, how we localize our look and feel so that we can become relevant to the needs of the local consumers. I think that then we try to be more specific on that second part of what I'm saying, so that we can connect at a good level with the local needs and the local audience.
Well, compared to the US, for example, it seemed when we were buying, you know, Hill's pet food for our dog versus, you know, what my parents are doing in the US, my parents are looking at, you know, food for obesity to keep the weight down, same as the people, right? It's kind of a mirror image. What's the scientific and the marketing messages that come through in Japan that's different, do you find?
Yeah, I think in some parts of the world, for example, the highly emotional messages play a very important role. I think when you come to Japan, I think it's more fact-based, more science and health-oriented. So communicating that and bringing that to life, I think makes a difference here to how you it's how you bring that message to the local consumers.
So I'd love to hear. I have an interesting question about how do you balance the science and the health with the concept of kawaii. Because it's not, you translate kawaii as cute, but it's kawaii in Japan is a whole nother level for pets. And I imagine those must be in consideration of your marketing team that the US just doesn't think about.
Yeah. And that's something that we always actually educate back into to the US team on what the kawaii culture is and how we can best incorporate that in our brands and our values, right? And I think we're doing a good job on bringing that message to life, because we have a brand that when people look at Hills, when people look at a brand that is called prescription diet or science diet, so all of that is already the scientific element is already coming through with who we are. So then, as we communicate in our marketing pieces, in our communication, that I think we have a bit more of the freedom, if I can use that word, to express the kawaii in a different way.
That's great. Let's move. I got one more question about Hills. I think sustainability is an important thing for Hills. Can you talk a little bit around that as well?
Yeah, and definitely sustainability is critical for us. It's included in our strategic initiatives. I was just mentioning to you earlier about the role that you see like sustainability playing in other parts of the world, like the US and Europe, which this is heavily important. And we try to do or approach sustainability in different ways, in different aspects, from our product, from the ingredients that we source, from the packaging that we use. So we try to incorporate this in different ways. But I think there is one program that we have, we call the, it's our Hills, Shelter, and Love, which is, Food, Shelter, and Love, which is, really, an amazing program, right? And we partner with shelters around the world. We provide these shelters with, our food, and then we support the shelters in finding a new home for dogs and cats that are in this shelter. So it's looking also into sustainability in the role that not only plays on products, but also on people and in our pets. And I'd say, like, just to give you like a sense of how serious we are with them, it's a program that exists since 2002. We've been working with over like 1,000 shelters, globally. We donated to these shelters over $300 million, US dollars worth of food during these years. And then as a result of that, we've been able to support them in, finding homes, in getting, over 15 million pets adopted. I think this is, a true demonstration about how sustainability is serious for us, and a good example of how we bring this to life. This is not just global. We also have this program in Japan. We do partner with a few shelters here in Japan supporting what they do. It's actually, I just came back from Shikoku Island a couple of weeks ago. I was there in the Kochi Prefecture, visiting one of our partners over there. Who operates a shelter. And honestly, like, I was just extremely impressed with the work that it's been done in Japan, like the facilities that they have, the support, and how they are finding the house for the pets in need. I think it was a truly amazing experience.
That's brilliant. It's a wonderful thing, because I know in Japan that's always always a challenge for adopting pets, and it's a growing challenge in Japan as well. So it's fantastic that Hills does that. But one of the things I want to do is kind of move from Hills specific, kind of tap into your expertise in marketing and brand leadership, because it's you have so much experience in that world. And one of the things that struck me is kind of your expertise in using data analytics. And I'd love to hear you speak a little bit around that, because oftentimes smaller companies, SMEs in Japan, don't have that capability. Whereas, you know, some of the big players like your Unilever, P&G, Heinz, they always expect that kind of data analytics. How have you seen that kind of evolve in the market since you first started your career? And then how does that influence your decision making now?
I think probably, David, this is one of the areas that I've seen like the most evolution since I started my career, right? I mean, if I look back, when I started in Brazil, a lot of the information was siloed, not available, not constantly analyzed, to something that is now a lot more real time, available to everyone, and really using that to support the decisions that we are making. And it also evolved like on the sources that were available. So we had more generic or broad like information in terms of sales. You start looking at website traffic. Mm-hmm. Now you have the level of personalization of the individual user that allows you to get more more understanding of the needs, the trends, what is required, and make more informed decision, more real-time informed decision using the data.
Do you find, from a personnel issue, I mean, I come at it from recruiting, I see the innovation coming in, I see a lot of the tools been put in globally, but there seems to be a lack of education within the branding and marketing in Japan to be able to use those tools or how to apply that. And it seems to be a consistent frustration for global leaders versus the local Japan. One, just finding the talent that can handle it, because there's just a shortage of talent that hasn't been trained in using this innovation, versus being able to then use the tools that are there.
Yeah, I think what I always say to my team, like analyzing the data, looking at the data can be easier. I think getting the deep insights behind the data and how do you use the data in a best way, that is more challenging. And I think that's what I see probably the gap sitting is on best understanding the data and transforming a number into an actionable insight that you can take action. So I see that happening. Hmm.
What innovation do you see coming over the horizon for us, and how is that going to play in maintaining brand?
I think, you know, like if you look at innovation, it's critical for us to keep building our brands, keep standing out in the crowd. So I think that's that'll be critical for us, for the market, for the people. I think in our case, we truly believe in innovation, and we have back in the US what we call our pet nutrition center. Where we have scientists, veterinarians, nutritionists, deeply understanding the needs of the pets of today and tomorrow, and using these to develop the cutting edge food science that we have. If we look back into some recent innovations that we brought to market that we feel like extremely proud, looking into the GI, into the gastrointestinal area, we have some very breakthrough technologies that we call like Actibiome, that works with the GI of the pets and really provides like some very very strong benefits to them. We have also innovation in the derm category that we recently brought to the market. We call the All Skin Barrier. And it's like a product that is designed to make the recommendation from the vets more easier and straightforward. So it takes care of all the different allergy conditions right out there, so it makes the whole recommendation and conversation with the pet parents easier. So again, it's just some examples on how innovation plays a role, and it's there to solve a need from the people, those people being pets, pet parents, or the veterinarian, or the consumers, but also addressing the needs of the pets.
That's great. I've heard the same thing. I had Hideo Goto-san from Schick on a podcast, and they built R&D in Japan for the same sort of reasons, that innovation was so important to FMCG business and just being able to scale that up. I need to ask, as a marathon runner, tell more about GI benefits for pets. What's because when I'm standing in the front gate of a marathon and I got some GI problems, that's always an issue. How does that work with my pet?
It's amazing how the science has been evolving in that area. And how we're finding like more and more connections of what happens in your gut to the, your holistic, health, right? And how you have the bacteria and how feeding the good bacteria in your gut that provides you an overall, impact either in if you stay like strictly to the GI, like on the constipation, or on the other extreme with the diarrhea on pets, or how managing that becomes important, and also how it's directly linked to other areas of your health. So it's an evolving and a rapidly evolving area of the health for the animals and also for the humans.
So. For the humans who have ever slept with pets in their bed, which you can do in the US, some countries they don't do that, but being woken up in the middle of the night with dog farts is not a pleasant thing to have. So this is, it can be a challenge in our world. So probably the first time we've talked about this on a podcast. Thank you for that, Ricardo.
Well, we look into what goes into the pet and also what comes out. I think that tells a lot of things about their health.
It's important. Well, let's talk about leadership. Let's move on to that, because you've been in some key markets, and I think it's always interesting to compare, especially Latin America and the US and Japan and Asia. What do you see as how do you approach leadership and the different environments? What do you kind of bring to the table that you think works?
You know, I look at my background and how my career progressed and how that helped shape who I am today. And I think one thing that stands out for me every time I stop and think about that is one is diversity. I think the importance that diversity has in the organization, in the discussion, the different perspectives, but also as an individual. I mean, growing up in Brazil, you are very comfortable with the environment that you were placed. You tend to connect more with the ones that are similar to you. And then you, as you progress, as you move to different countries, as you move to different cultures, you start seeing that, well, I am the diverse one here. And you start to put yourself on the other side of the table, right? And then you realize how that is important and how that can impact how people and professional feel. So I think that one is something that I personally respect a lot, and that I consider a lot on the leadership. I think also the other element, I'll talk about adaptability. So when you move to these different cultures, when you are dealing with different people, you cannot expect that you step into Japan and you have a long-standing culture and then everyone will have to adapt to yourself. I think you have to adapt to the needs of the market and the people. And it's not the same tools that you have to use today versus what you used yesterday in different locations with different people, with different teams. So I think that adaptability, it's important. I think the third point I'll consider, David, would be communication. I think we need to, as leaders, to be able to communicate effectively. And no matter where these people are sitting in the organization, in their geographies, so we need to communicate. You need to have some empathy as you communicate to people. You need to listen to what they're saying. And you need to make sure there's also some, I'll say some mutual understanding. Language can be a barrier. I think I have, I carry an accent. Not everybody will understand my accent. And I need to make sure that as I'm talking to people, they understand what I'm saying. Same thing on the other hand, right? So I have to talk to Japanese people that maybe don't speak English or don't speak English well. And then I have to also make sure that there is some level of mutual understanding. So communication plays a very important role. The other thing would be, I'd say it's the importance of the teams and the importance of empowering the team that you work with. You cannot expect that once you move to a new location that you're gonna step in day one running. It takes you some time to adapt and to adjust. And the only people that or the only pillar that you can rely is the people that are there, that knows, that have the history, and really then building trust with them and empowering the team becomes important. And then just maybe one final one that I would say, I think for myself, on the strategic thinking, I think you make decisions based on, who you are, your experiences, how you dealt with situations in the past. So once you are, again, going through different geographies, different situations, I think that forms, your personality, that forms your professional persona. And I think that, that helps you, on bringing different perspectives when you have to make, difficult decisions. So I think the strategic thinking also, and how we use that becomes important. So I'll summarize into those 5 points, I'll say.
That's great. Just, thinking if moving from Brazil to like Topeka, Kansas to, Tokyo, very, very different, locales. My dad grew up in Nebraska, was born in Kansas. So I know Kansas very well. And it is not anything like Tokyo. So to be able to work with such diverse sorts of populations is quite interesting, I think.
That's great.
It is great. Yeah, indeed. Like it's a great experience.
And I think that gives a unique diversity of thinking and an innovation because people need, it's creative and it teaches people how to work on a different layering and understand each other. I think that's fantastic. What's your biggest challenge that you're facing right now in your role?
You know, I think the world is developing and evolving rapidly. I think especially with the last like few years, when we look back into all the changes that happened very fast, I think the level of uncertainty on people's mind. And I think how that connects to, anxiety, the unknown of the future. Mm. And I think the need for resilience, right? So that there's the changes are happening. They are not going to stop, but they're happening faster than any time before. So I feel that's the biggest challenge that I have to deal with. How do we stay up to date? How do we stay competitive? How do we keep people engaged in these rapidly evolving scenarios, and I'd say like one of the critical elements, as we were just discussing now, I think communication becomes very important. I think you need to bring people along with you. Constant communication in these rapidly changing situations are important. And I think that will help bring some sort of stability to the team.
Hmm. Yeah, it's so important, right? I imagine just with AI, there's just so much change happening. And I think it scares people. And then when we have in Japan an aging population, there's a lot that needs to be retrained, retooled. it's not eliminated. It's how do we, you know, bring people along. So I think that's wonderful to hear. You've taken an interesting career move to get into general management. Most marketing people don't see that. Usually they go through sales. Sometimes there is someone that will go through. What would you say to marketing professionals who want to get into being a general manager? Because I meet many, many who say, I want to be the CEO, I want to be the director, but often the company will select from, you know, the head of sales instead, right? It's the kind of the traditional farming ground.
Yeah, I think the first thing I'll say is don't be afraid. It's not easy, but it's definitely an exciting move. I think it's a move that you learn a lot, and then you develop a lot yourself as a professional. But of course, you need to prepare yourself to be ready when and if that comes, right? And as a marketer, look into ways of broadening the skill set. Look at what you have today, like what are your areas of expertise and what are potential areas that you need to develop to become a general manager. So, for example, look into understanding more of the financial side. Get deep into the P&L of your brand and products. Better understand the impact and the return of the investment that you are doing in the communication. Understand more of the overall operational elements that do impact the products that you are launching, that you are innovating. So I think getting probably a bit beyond your current area of comfort or expertise, I think that will help prepare you for the future. I'd say also look into broadening, expanding a bit more your perspective as a professional. And I think there's ways that you can do that. I think you can do that with cross-functional projects. So there's always new projects coming up in an organization that you can raise your hand and really participate on those. There's a lot you could learn. You could look into assignments, and those assignments could be into a short term in a different area of the company. It could be in a different geography. They could be for a short time, but they can also be for a longer time. So I think all of these moves that you do in your career can also prepare you better for the future, for what you want to become as a general manager.
That's great. Yeah, I think one that you touched upon earlier, just to highlight as well, that you mentioned was supply chain and being able to understand that. And I think as a marketer, being able to understand how marketing influences and impacts all the other areas, whether it's commercial, whether it's back office, it's just huge, right? Understanding the PL, understanding the commercial side, understanding distribution, it's all. Once you get all those parts and how it all coordinates, it's kind of quite fun, right?
It is, yeah. I think that's definitely the fun part of the development journey.
We'll go with one last question. What excites you the most about the future of the FMCG industry?
You know, the FMCG is it's an exciting area to be. I think if you look at the resilience that the industry has, if you look at the potential that the industry has to reinvent itself and to bring innovation to people, if you look at how the it embraces technologies and how it uses for the future, so I think the flexibility and how the FMCG industry adapts all of these trends and has an ability to transform itself to be ready for the future, I think that's what excites me the most, right? So tomorrow for sure in FMCG is not going to be the same as today. And I think that potential for growing, developing, learning, I think that's what excites me for tomorrow and for the future.
That's great. Thank you so much for sharing that. I loved your insights today. I think it's my big takeaway was really around, I love the pet nutrition. I think that's awesome. And the innovation that you do there, and also all the environmental awareness. That was one of the things going through and doing research for this episode that really came through on the website and everything that goes on at Hills. So thank you so much for sharing that story. If people want to reach out to you, Ricardo, where's the best place to do that?
I think you can reach out to me on LinkedIn. I think that's the best way. You can find me over there as Ricardo Tasca.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Ricardo. I've enjoyed chatting with you today. It's been very insightful to learn more about you and about the world and things going on. So thanks for taking the time out.
Good, David. Thank you so much for the conversation. It was really good having a chance to talk to you today. I'm doing the uptown slow down. Yeah.